So our next presenter is going to be Mark Lundy from University of California, and presenting calibrating in-field diagnostic tools for improved nitrogen management in spring wheat.
All right, thanks a lot. Since you introduced the title, I'll just move right in. And if, for those of you that were here for Steve Wright's presentation, we got a little bit of overview, so I won't spend too much time here, but a little background on wheat production. In California, about 300,000 hectares a year, the majority of that grown for grain, although a decent amount goes for fodder. Grain growers are paid not only by yield, but by protein. Average yields around 6 tons, and as Steve mentioned earlier, protein really varies by region. In my area, the Sacramento Valley, which is where the data that I'm presenting is coming from, the protein targets are a lot lower. Average protein is lower there. Part of the reason is that we get a lot more rainfall during the season, so that interacts with nitrogen some. In addition, irrigation is less of a given than it would be down in San Joaquin, where you pretty much wouldn't make a crop if you didn't irrigate. So growers are less on their irrigation in the Sacramento Valley. It's more opportunistic. Many growers split their applications of nitrogen between pre-plant and increasingly putting some down at the early vegetative growth stage. And there's been a decent amount of work and on wheat and other crops just demonstrating that the better able you're able to match nitrogen timing to crop uptake, the better your fertilizer use efficiency is going to be. And specifically, some work out of Spain in a similar system, Mediterranean spring wheat system, similar soils, showing increased fertilizer use efficiency and higher yield potential as a result of matching that demand. In addition, late applications, this is sometime between heading and flowering, can increase the protein content of the grain, so long as there's some high yield potential. If you're going for a moderate to low yielding crop, this effect of late applications kind of goes away a little bit. So using those two pieces of previous work and that previous knowledge, our first hypothesis is just pretty straightforward. Split applications are going to improve your biological, environmental, and economic outcomes. And so we wanted to measure that with some of the newer varieties that are being grown in California. A lot of the work in California on this type of thing was done a long time ago, as Steve mentioned earlier as well. So we had multiple rate, multiple timing fertility trials across a range of environments to try to accomplish lots of protein yield potentials. And I'll go into that in a second. And the second part, the part that I'm going to key on right now, is whether that flowering application, heading to flowering application of nitrogen is going to increase protein content, and whether we can predict that response in yield in real time. And a study that kind of influenced how we approached this was Nakano et al. They measured a bunch of proxies for yield potential, basically the sink at that point of the growing season. Most of your yield components are determined. So how much yield potential do you have? And then also trying to get some proxy for the plant concentration, whether it be that the leaf concentration or the actual tissue a SPAD measurement, chlorophyll color and concentration that way. So building on that, we wanted to really see whether a combined measurement that took into account both the yield potential and the plant nitrogen concentration would improve a decision support tool. So, just for the sake of time, let's take a look at the devices that we were using. On the left there, this is a at-leaf meter, which is a SPAD proxy. The major difference is that it's a lot cheaper, but it's been demonstrated to give similar information to the SPAD. And it measures both in the visible in near-infrared spectrums, and importantly, it's taking a tissue concentration. So we were taking the tissue concentration of the penultimate leaf at our decision support, at our decision point, which was around flowering. The other one is a handheld NDVI meter, also measuring in the visible and near-infrared. And as with a lot of things, the cost of these are coming down. So we calibrated these in environments that we were trying to achieve gradients of nitrogen and water. And so we have, in the interest of time, I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but we had rates from 0 to 335, and then timings where you saw 100% or from 0 to 100% at pre-plant tillering, and then smaller fractions at boot and flowering. And the fields were either fully irrigated, and in this case, field one was pretty optimally irrigated. And then field two is a long-term experiment that has side-by-side replications of that are an acre, where they're either receiving supplemental irrigation or they're not being irrigated. And so the supplemental irrigation is kind of representative of what you might see from growers in the region. It's not necessarily optimally timed, but it's more than nothing. So we also had a couple different varieties. Importantly, the pre-plant soil nitrate in these soils was really low, so we were likely to see a good response and get a good response curve. So just briefly touching on the first hypothesis, split applications are going to improve the efficiency of fertilizer use, which is not that surprising. But looking at some of the details of that, this is the protein yield, integration of the overall productivity in terms of nitrogen, and the green is applications that were applied all pre-plant, and the gray were split applications. There's an interaction between the rate and the timing, but once you took away the really high rates, this was really highly significant, and these are rates where you generally would see growers using. So in terms of biology, that was better to use the splits, and it follows in terms of fertilizer use efficiency and value. This value is an integration of just not just the price, but the protein premium or discount. And in my region, it's pretty extreme. It's a $2 discount per percent below 11 and $1 per percent above 11 right now. And it varies by region, it varies by season. That's a market thing. But those are the numbers I use for that. So moving on to the calibration results, and I want to take a second, because I didn't have a lot of time to jump into a lot of methodology, but just to explain this the method I was using statistically. This is a linear plateau model, and basically using a nonlinear model, accounting for irrigation or water management nested within the location as a random effect, we're basically with maximum likelihood asking at what point does the slope no longer change significantly, and then at that point develop an error estimate for both the independent and dependent variable. And in this case, our x-axis is just the nitrogen fertilizer applied up to that point, and this is the flowering at flowering. And on our y-axis, in one case, we have the chlorophyll index, which is just a plant concentration proxy, and the NDVI meter, which again is the yield potential proxy. So what I want to point out to you is that in this plot on the left, these were the two plots at the location that had different irrigation schemes. This one had supplemental irrigation. This one had no irrigation, and you probably heard that there was a pretty epic drought in California. So the red dot is the average reading in the unirrigated plots. And even though the average nitrogen rate was lower, there wasn't much of a plant to take up that nitrogen. So you see the leaf nitrogen concentration proxy higher than the same location where there was supplemental irrigation. That's the take-home for there. This seems to be sensitive to plant concentration. And then over here, this is the NDVI meter. You see no real difference at the location But the other thing that was going on besides water was this field had pretty optimal management all around. No weed problems, very little disease pressure. This field had a lot of other things going on that were going to limit its yield. So the NDVI meter seemed to be fairly sensitive at picking that up in real time. So here we are at our decision support location, and at this point all we have is how much we've put down and what the meter readings are giving us. What we really want to look at is what is the result of that going to be. And so the chlorophyll meter does seem to be a good predictor of the protein result, as we expected from what we saw in season. And likewise, the NDVI meter did seem to be a good predictor of the yield potential. And also, I wanted to point out that these thresholds, even with different x-axes, these thresholds were almost the same. So the statistical method that we're using to develop that threshold seems to be fairly robust. So let's put this all together and think about what you would use this for if you were a grower. And this is structured with, on the left side, these are combinations of the sensor readings and the nitrogen management at flowering that would lead to what we'd expect the lowest protein yield to be. And this would be this combination that we would expect the highest protein yield to be. And so, for example, these are the readings where the NDVI, these were the readings that were below the threshold for the NDVI meter. These were the readings that were below the threshold that we developed for the chlorophyll meter. So really we want to combine the two of these to get the most information out of it. So let's just do that and see what it looks like. In this example, your NDVI threshold says low. You're below the threshold for protein yield that you're looking for, and your chlorophyll index is low, so you also have low plant concentration. If you applied in that situation, that top dress flowering application, when there's not enough of a yield potential to take it up, you're basically wasting that application. And that's what this is being able to pick up. And conversely, if you have a low plant concentration, low leaf concentration of nitrogen, but a high yield potential, and you've still got that grain filling going on, that application is very worthwhile. And so we can pick out these differences and explain what was happening on the results side just from the meters. What does that mean in terms of value? In this example, it was fairly dramatic. In the one case, if you applied here when you maybe should have held on to that nitrogen, the cost of application is what you save. Here, these two data points are straddling the protein discount threshold. So in the one case, you're getting a premium. The other place, you're getting a discount. So very worth your while in that case. But importantly, you can't come to either of these decisions without both of the meters. So it's not one or the other, it's both. So just to sum up, split applications of nitrogen improve the efficiency of fertilizer use. Those infield sensors do seem to be providing actionable real-time information in the locations that we are measuring them in Sacramento Valley. And like I just said, you really do need to combine those pieces of information to get the most out of them. A few caveats, though. Like I mentioned at the beginning, Sacramento Valley, where we measured this, our protein values are low. This is going to be harder to come by as you get up into the higher protein ranges. So in some ways, this is a little bit of a low-hanging fruit. And we intentionally picked sites that were going to be very responsive to fertilizer. So we're able to pick these things out and see them. But it might be a little bit more complicated as you start getting other pools of nitrogen into the mix. So we're hopeful, and I think that there's some real promise here, but like with any empirically derived data, it's only really going to describe what you captured, and if you don't go capture what you're eventually trying to make a recommendation for, then it's going to have those limitations. So we'll keep on working on making the data set that we develop our thresholds more representative and validate that data set independently. So I want to thank California Fertilizer Research and Education Program and the California Weed Commission. Both of these provided funding for the work that we did, and I had a couple of graduate student interns that collected a lot of the data, Jason Tisich and Ryan Burns. Also, one of the sites was at the long-term experiment station that Ag Sustainability Institute runs, and that was useful to have those water and nitrogen gradients to develop some of this work. So with that, thank you for your attention, and thank you for the phone call, Steve. That was really helpful. And I'll take any questions. Oh, okay. Maybe I should put those six slides I took out back in. It was $2 per percent below the threshold per bushel discount. Yeah, I kind of mumbled through that. And that's not hard and fast. That changes by the buyer and by season. That's a movable thing. So the important thing is not the absolute values I showed, but just that you can differentiate some of those values. The value is, it does apply for what the discount structure is in the region where we measured this right now, but that's going to change.
So what was the discount?
It was a $2 per bushel per percent below the threshold. Yeah, we're repeating the same structure this year, and we've made measurements up in the Intermountain region, which has different varieties, different environment, different protein thresholds, and so we'll see across a broader set of genetic environments and growing environments how well the thresholds hold up writ large, and whether or not we have to kind of calibrate in a location-specific and a variety-specific manner. And if that's the case, you know, that's a lot more work. But we're basically going to see in different environments how well this holds up. Well, we actually took samples at tillering as well, and boot, and flowering, and in the interest of time, I haven't presented those. And I will say, too, by the time you get to flowering, you've got as much information as you're going to get from these types of plant-based sensors. So I am also showing the sort of most the most informative time that you're going to get from a sensor. Earlier in the season, you're going to get increasingly less information from the plant system because there's been less time for that dynamic to play out in the plant. But yeah, we are calibrating for those other times too.
Okay, I came up to $6 to $7 per ton. Now that's below what percent total? That's what happens if you get a below 11.
That's a below 11. Right, and our target's 11. But like you mentioned earlier in your talk, I mean, that's you're looking at the difference between grain and feed. And so when you get up into the higher protein ranges, your discount's not going to look like that. Right. I mean, the prices are going to vary depending on the market. So, whatever market you are at is going to help determine whether or not it's worth your while to do this. And so, the biology is the biology, and Right. So this really is the extreme in terms of the prices, but prices are they're important. They're relevant, obviously, but you're going to get information. This is the information you can get, and then from there you can decide whether it's worth your while to do that given your setting. Yeah, that's true too. I mean, in my area, this is the lowest value crop that they grow, and they are summer farmers who grow tomatoes and trees and rice and other things. And this is a rotation crop. It has some rotational benefits. It gets very little of their overall attention, and because on a good year you can make a crop without irrigating it, and also a lot of the maintenance in the ditches happens during this time, so you're not guaranteed to have water. They're not optimizing their irrigation management, and as a result, the buyers in this region they kind of have to take what they get from the region. But one thing also related to those thresholds that I didn't mention that is relevant to if in a different setting you were trying to apply, we haven't really calculated the error. We haven't incorporated the error from the actual sensors into that. So I'm just taking that threshold like you could go get that threshold crystal clear in the field, and that's not really true. You know, if you have a threshold at 46 and you have a unit error on either side of that, that needs to be accounted for as well.
Right. They're still trying to do, now they can kind of.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as an extension person, I'm trying to use what's on the shelf. And so these two tools are on the shelf, and there's certainly lots of work with the particular spectral wavelength that you're focusing on and all that stuff. But I think the big picture, regardless of the tools that you're using, if you're going to get more information from the system, then you're going to do a better job at understanding the system. So trying to account for the concentration as well as the sync in some way is going to be useful. That's what that paper that we were following was doing too. So. No. I mean, it's somewhat predictive, but it's not predictive of that decision. It's going to be predictive of the overall protein yield across a really wide range of protein yields, but that's a huge range of protein yields, and you know, when you get real extremes, you can get correlations with lots of things. Yeah. There's been a lot of spectral work in maize. I don't know specifically whether this exact same approach. We've done a little bit of this, not as rigorous or involved this year with these two same sensors in corn, and found that I think the total biomass of corn is going to dilute a lot of these things, and also it's a tougher nut to crack based on my limited experience using similar approaches in corn, but I don't know that with any certainty. All right, thank you.